Well, we're getting pretty close to the end, dear students, and this will be our last chapter regarding investments. And you know what? Not everybody just wants to own mutual funds, right? So let's take a look at real estate and other investment alternatives. Our first presentation will discuss real estate. Now, real estate is tricky, I like to say, which means it's a real pita, pain and not right. Remember, the mutual funds are so easy, real estate, no. And it's kind of difficult to teach real estate in a classroom setting, reading it from a book. You really got to get out there and work in the industry or just have a lot of money and start investing in real estate, because it's not something easily taught in a book. And so what we say, what we recommend is, if you are interested in getting involved in real estate, get a job as a property manager, as an appraiser, in a real estate finance office, title insurance, because that's the way you see the industry from the inside out. And you learn, oh yeah, don't do that. Okay, I know what, yeah. So it can be, yeah, let's continue. Slide number two. There are two types of real estate investments, direct and indirect. And when people talk about real estate investments, they usually mean direct investments, where your name is on the title, or your entity, your legal entity, such as a trust that your lawyer helps you create, which we'll just talk about in our next chapter, and your home, your principal residence. And as we discussed in chapter 7, your home is a major asset of most households, has some pretty good tax advantages, unless you live in California or one of the other big tax states like New York or Illinois and New England and the like, where property, or Washington, D.C., where property values are very expensive and the Republicans killed your tax advantages. It's a good hedge against inflation, because a home typically produces an after inflation return of about 2.5 to 3% a year. San Diego has been a notable exception. It's been a whole lot more than that. But in my humble opinion, it's a home first, an investment second. You're going to hear differently, especially from the real estate agents. So when people say, well, shouldn't I invest in real estate? And I say, well, you know, did you buy your own house? Yeah, or want to buy your own house. You'll have some real estate investments just because you'll own a home. But unlike a mutual fund, you can live in the home. You can't live in a mutual fund. So again, I will say it's a home first, an investment second. Now, other types of direct real estate investments include a vacation home, and that depends on the IRS, how it views it as a rental property or a vacation home, so you have to dig deeper into that. And rental property is a whole course unto itself. We'll spend a little bit of time here in this chapter discussing it, but really, as I said, folks, you got to get into the industry to learn. Or be prepared to come up with a lot of money, because they want 25% down, and you got to have really, really good credit and a pretty darn good income, and it's not for the faint of heart. By far, the most gains come from undeveloped land, dirt, but stay far away from this, folks, unless you really know what you're doing, folks, because your money is riding on a single parcel of land that's not producing any income. There's no cash flow, and you still have to pay the property taxes, and there's often no guarantee that you'll be able to develop the land. So do not make raw, undeveloped land your first real estate investment, okay? Unless you get into the industry and you've been in there a few years and you all of a sudden see this piece of land where the city is moving towards, or maybe it's zoned correctly. You'll know, oh no, stay away from that, because the last person stopped paying the taxes 5 years ago and bought it for really dirt cheap, because the person before that stopped paying their taxes 10 years before that, and there's a reason why it was so cheap and this county was able to dump it onto the next unsuspecting individual. Slide number four. The next category are indirect loans, indirect investments. And actually, this is not a bad way to become a landlord without actually becoming a landlord. Real estate syndicates, limited partnerships. Again, usually you have to have a good amount of money and you really should know what you're doing before you get involved with these things. But real estate investment trusts, REITs as they are called, are really great ways for you to invest in real estate and not have any of the headaches of a landlord. A REIT looks like a mutual fund. It sells and buys, like you buy and sell it like a stock, and it looks like a mutual fund in that they hold real estate investments instead of stocks or bonds. You know, the shopping centers and the malls and the apartment buildings and warehouses and hotels and the like often are not, oh, usually are not owned by the tenants. Walmart or Home Depot enter into 40 or 50 year lease agreements because their business is retail. And some of them, such as Sears, used to buy their real estate, but most of them say, no, that's not our business. You know, the REIT will take care of it. Now, it's not a company, it's not a corporation, it's a trust. So it's a little tricky, but for all intents and purposes, to you and me as potential investors, it looks like a stock, it trades like a stock, yeah. They typically will pay pretty good they don't pay dividends, they pay funds from operations. Again, they look like dividends, they look like interest payments, so just think of them that way. They're taxed a little differently. So that's one way to become a landlord and not have to deal with all the landlord problems. Well, what's the downside? Well, you know, they want to get paid, just like a mutual fund wants to get paid. So there's annual operating expenses that have to be dealt with. Now, equity sharing is another way to be involved in real estate, but not be a landlord. You have the cash to put down for a house, but somebody else actually will join in with you. And this is typically done within a family, but it doesn't have to be. So let's say the grandparents, the parents have the down payment, $50,000 or whatever, to put down. And the younger couple or the single person, the son or daughter, says, you know, I want to buy a house, Mom. I want to buy a house, Grandma. Let's get together. Let's share in the equity appreciation. So the parents, the grandparents put down the down payment, and the young couple or the individual, the single person, buys the home. They all buy the home. They're all, make sure you talk to a good lawyer. Yeah, because this can be real tricky. But they live in it. The younger folks live in it, make the payments, and as the house appreciates, then both parties will share in the appreciation. And of course, if you had done this in San Diego and made it through the Great Recession, you've done very, very well. Now, you can actually invest in first and second mortgages. It's called hard money, and there's a reason why it's called hard money. These are people who go to the bank or the credit union and they say, forget it, we ain't touching you with a 10-foot pole. So they go to these lenders, and you can actually buy into them with as little as $25,000 or more, and you'll get a very good return on your money, 7 to 10% or more. What do we know about more return? Right, more risk. Now, I've always been really skeptical of these things. I met one person who did it, and he said he turned down 3 for every 1 he took, and then even he got burnt. But then a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, said, Frank, would you come with me to this presentation first and second trust? Actually, first. They only do first. The second just means they're second in line to the first mortgage. So first mortgage has to be paid off, and then the second mortgage gets paid off. And so I said, okay. So the woman gave the presentation, and she seemed very competent. And my friend is looking at me. I said, okay. She goes, any questions? I said, okay, what's your default rate? She goes, what's that? I said, how many loans are in trouble? She goes, well, we got about 200 loans, and there's 2 in trouble and 2 more that we're pretty sure they're going to make it through. And I said, 1% default rate? Are you serious? good for you. Any bank would be happy with a 1% default rate. And so they really did their homework and only took people who, you know, they believed were going to be able to make the payments. And they only did 70% loan to value in a first trust deed position, which, if you kind of know what I'm talking about, is a very enviable place to be. So she actually came and talked to our investment club a couple times, and she's if you want the info, give me, I'll plug her. Joanne Ortega, yeah, send me an email. I'll give you her information. And then if you need tax credits, and this is usually people who are, you know, rolling in dough, you can buy into low-income housing. At first, it's a tax credit or a deduction. But the idea is eventually this is going to become a real estate investment. But this is usually public housing or low-income housing and the like. And so, again, this is for people who have a lot of money to spare because it could turn out badly, but usually not. But it takes years before it actually starts making money. So you gotta think long term. Okay, now what about commercial property? Ha! Forget it in San Diego. Oh my goodness. I mean, think about it, a duplex or maybe a small apartment building, but we're looking at little hotels, office buildings, stores. Just no. You think the price of houses have gone up in San Diego? You ain't seen nothing until you take a look at the price of commercial property. If you were to move somewhere else or think about buying somewhere else, you're looking for income to be greater than expenses. But don't be surprised if you're looking at negative cash flow, which is a fancy way of saying the rent doesn't cover the mortgage and the insurance and the taxes and all the maintenance. And yeah, no. The rule of thumb is you're looking for 7 to 10 times rent price. So for example, if the house costs $500,000, right? You want to get about $50,000 or more to rent every year. Yeah, well, is that going to happen? Not likely. Happened during the Great Recession. You were able to find places that were renting for 7 to 10 times the rent. I mean, we're selling for 7 to 10 times the rent. But now the rents have gone up quite a bit, but the prices have gone up even higher. So if you're so inclined, I think the bargains are in the South Bay, but there are no more bargains anymore, folks. Yeah, even Tijuana. This is the weirdest thing. Many Americans, many gringos are going south of the border to live in Tijuana, and their prices are going up, and the locals ain't happy about it. They think of it as another North American invasion, which is what they call what we call the Mexican-American War. They call it the Great North American Invasion. I think that's what they call it. Okay, so commercial property, again, get involved in the industry, see how it works out for you, and then lots of luck. Because, you know, I was really interested in commercial property for a bit, and then I realized it's out of your league, Payana. Just invest in REITs. How about fixer-uppers? Concentrate on smaller properties first, 2 to 4 units. Live in one of them. Very cool. Then you know if the others are having parties at 3 a.m. in the morning and trashing the place. Look for low down payments and seller financing of rundown properties because banks usually do not want a loan to distressed properties. However, they are all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books. What does this mean? In other words, somebody's going through foreclosure. They are really anxious to get it off of their books, as it says, that they say. In other words, the banks are not in the real estate business. They're in the loan business. They want the loans to be performing. So somebody obviously has stopped making the payments and they had to foreclose and now they want to get it off of their books. So they will help you finance a rundown property. Whereas, you know, fixer-uppers, they usually don't want to touch unless you have a good track record. You could show, hey, look, I've fixed up these two properties. And then they'll say, okay. Now, my advice is to stay away from property managers. Learn or find very good plumbers, carpenters, electricians, and the like. Because my humble opinion nobody cares about your property as much as you do. There are always exceptions. And maybe you want to buy something that's not in San Diego, so you can't, you know, jump on a plane and fly to Phoenix or Las Vegas or drive to Phoenix or Las Vegas when something goes wrong. So that, but notice the property managers take 10%. You know, they take 10% of the rent. Typically, it's negotiable. So we have some great people that we can call upon to help us, and we do our own property management. But that's up to you. Most importantly, are you savvy dealing with repairs, and are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important, if not more, than fixing a toilet. One bad tenant can set you back thousands of dollars, dear students. You know, you sometimes will, especially if you're in a renting position, get not very happy with the landlord, but you talk to some landlords and they will have horror stories of what tenants have done. And it's getting harder and harder to evict. And the lawyers are asking for more and more money. So remember this. You have to be able to deal with the repairs and deal with renters at the same time. And it can get ugly, very, very ugly. Just ask any landlord or just look online for horror stories. I thought I had the best one, right? I think I have a picture. It's on the website. It's a picture of somebody who used the living room of the house with hardwood floors, very beautiful, used to be beautiful hardwood floors, to work on their motorcycles. But then, somebody one-upped me, a student, who said, well, my parents had a rental house. He's from Texas in the military. And he said they rented out the two renters, two guys, two roommates. The one roommate killed the other roommate in the house and then set the house on fire trying to destroy the evidence. Whoa! Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I said, okay, I'm one-upped. Make improvements that add perceived value. Install a white picket fence, according to J.P.D. Seema. I'm an imbecile when it comes to working on anything. Every time I use a hammer, I always hit my thumb first because I know I'm going to do it anyway. But this guy's a genius, and he says you install a white picket fence. People love a white picket fence, and he's the guy who had a house that was settling. You know, the foundation was a little down. It's not usually a problem, but it looks funny. So when he replaced the windows and the doors, he tilted them, you know, away from the settling, and so the house looks straight. It's nothing new. The Leaning Tower of Pisa. If you look at the top, the Italian engineers realized that it was sinking as they were building it, so they tilted the top. Didn't help. So check out anything written by Mr. J.P. DeSima. Okay, what are the advantages of real estate? Well, it's a hedge against inflation. Which is a fancy way of saying when inflation goes up, usually so does housing, so do housing prices, real estate prices. The use of borrowed funds, that's called financial leverage for investment purposes, this allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. Remember everything we said about make love, not loans. Frugal, spend less than you earn. Don't make loans. Well, that goes out the door when you're in the world of real estate. And we'll see an example of this, a vivid example in a bit. Again, most of you don't want to get involved in a partnership until you know what you're doing. Hey, no management concerns. And one of the things that I always thought was good about real estate is you just can't check the price every day on the internet. Well, you know, that's the problem with stocks. You know, people say, I'm in it for the long term. And then every 10 minutes, they're looking down at their phone. Oh, it's going down 15 cents. What should I do? And like, no, turn off your phone is what you should do. Well, that didn't used to be able to do that with real estate, but now you can. And people are checking Zillow and Trulia and Redfin to see if their house went up $3,000 in the last month or something like that. Just, again, it's a long-term investment, dear students. Okay, now what are the disadvantages? Well, liquidity. We talked about liquidity, the ability to easily sell quickly your investment and get the cash. Well, real estate is the poster child for an illiquid investment. It may be hard to sell your property or your share in the partnership. Usually a house sells, you know, 2, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months when things are bad. In San Diego, there have been many times when you put the for sale sign up on Thursday and by Saturday you've gotten 5 or more offers and Sunday you write up the sales agreement. But that's not typical for real estate, folks. That's our supply demand imbalance here in Southern California. This is not a problem with REITs, which are like stocks, which are very liquid. You just go online or call your broker. Normally, there's a lack of diversification. How many properties can you buy? You see these things on the internet. I guess I should read some of them, but I just think it's so bogus. He bought 110 properties with no money down. Like, right. Wait, how did he pull that one off? With a gun? Yeah, I don't know about you, but when you typically they went 25% down. And REITs are very diversified. You buy a REIT and they have, you know, 20 malls or 15 warehouse projects or whatever. Real estate syndicates have this weird passive tax shelter thing you have to worry about. And then the management and tenant problems. Remember the PETA factor P, pain in the... Right. And property values can decline. There was a time when people saying, oh, it was the mid-2000s, you know, during the housing bubble. Property values are never going to go down. And I'm thinking, oh, boy, that right there is a red flag right there. I knew. My buddy, both of he and I were just saying it's going to happen. Now, he was much more forceful than I. I thought, you know, 20% down, like they did in 1990, 1991. People don't remember that, but they did. He said, no, 50, 60% down. I said, Jim, you know, you got to go back to the Great Depression to see housing and real estate fall that far. He was right. He was right. Because in certain areas like Chula Vista and Temecula and some other areas, not so much along the coast, they still went down, but nowhere near as much as they went down in some of the areas where the price appreciation had just been phenomenal. He was right. Come on, Piano, admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. This is what people were telling me, you know, a few years ago when housing started exploding again during the pandemic. And then back in the mid-2000s, we go back to Andrew Tobias's wonderful phrase, beware the permanent trend. I love that. It's permanent trend. It's an oxymoron, right? Like jumbo shrimp or straight curve or military intelligence. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. Ask those who bought in 1990 and sold in 94 and those who bought in 2006 and went through foreclosure. There is now much worry about interest rates, but if you plan to hold for the long term, you should do well, in my humble opinion, because it's not as though San Diego is becoming less desirable to live in. Well, after the coldest winter in 90 years, maybe there's something to be said for that, but I don't think so. And by the way, we hope that you've seen throughout our discussion of investments is that there is no perfect investment. Nothing humans have done has ever been perfect. All investments have advantages. All investments have disadvantages. And you have to weigh the pros and cons and decide for you what is best, realizing that typically if you want to do well, you got to think long term. Unless you're very good at trading, speculating, gambling. And then I wish you a lot of luck. And by the way, this is what people were saying about stocks back in 1999, about internet stocks that were going to go to the moon. But what about leverage, Piano? Huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, I already told you about that, didn't I? But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes, it does, but there's a darker side to it. You live by financial leverage, you can die by financial leverage. Let's take a look at the two problems from an older textbook circa 2004. that illustrate the power of leverage. They were called problems 1 and 2. That's what they were called in the book. So here they are. And this is a worksheet. So you can print out the worksheet. In the face-to-face class, we would hand out the worksheet and we'd do it together. Calculating the return on investment. Dave, I didn't even put a silly name in there because they used the name Dave, so I'm giving them credit for Dave. Dave bought a rental property for $200,000 cash. 1 year later, he sold it for $240,000. What was the return on his $200,000 investment? Well, let's see now. $200,000 is what he brought to the table. That's the initial price. He sold it for $240,000. And this is what was going on at the time, folks. People were buying a condo, which hadn't even been built yet. It wasn't even built yet. They were putting, you know, $30,000 down, and it was, you know, $200,000 condo. That's what they said the price was going to be. Well, by the time the condo was ready, 9 months later, it had appreciated to $240,000. Yeah, amazing. So $240,000 minus $200,000 is a $40,000 absolute dollar return. We call it the absolute return or the dollar return. So you take the absolute dollar return divided by the initial investment of $200,000, and you get a 20% return on your investment. It cost us $200,000 to make $40,000. This is what was going on at the time. Housing was going up 20% a year, and it didn't seem to be stopping. It started around 2000 and then just kept on going, 2001, because I guess people were taking the money out of the internet stocks and putting them into housing. Well, here is what is more typical for people to invest. Usually people don't come up with $200,000 cash when they buy a property. Calculating the return on investment using financial leverage. Suppose Dave only invested $20,000. Now, this is no longer allowed. This is my understanding. This is why I think those articles are bogus. Because they want 25%. This is only 10%. He only put down $20,000 on a $200,000 house. So he brought to the table only $20,000 for the down payment. He borrowed $180,000, 90% financing. Now they want at least, you know, 25%, only 75% financing. So what is his return on investment now? Well, he still made a $40,000 absolute dollar return. He bought it for $200,000, sold it for $240,000. But now his absolute dollar return is divided by the initial investment, what he brought to the table, as the saying goes, of $20,000. He made a 200% return on his investment. He took $20,000 and was able to make $40,000 on it. It only cost us $20,000 to make $40,000. So you understand why it's called leverage? He used the borrowed money as a lever to magnify his return. You know, tenfold. Well, that works great. While the prices are going up, I like to think of it like musical chairs. The music's playing, everybody's partying until, I called it problem 666. It's a joke, folks. You know, supposedly that's the from the Bible, Revelation, the number of the beast. And if you, depends on who you believe, but the beast was Rome. It was pretty straightforward. And 666 was supposed to be the number of days that the Roman Empire was going to last. He was only off by about 300 years. Calculating the return on investment using financial leverage, and things do not go as planned. Suppose Dave invested only $20,000 of his money and borrowed $180,000, and the property went down 20%. Now, some properties went down a whole lot more during the Great Recession. The question is now, what's he going to tell his wife? This is a problem that was conveniently left out of the older book. You see, even financial experts and financial authors get caught up in bubbles too. Okay, we had a $20,000 initial price. It dropped by $40,000. Now the house is worth $160,000. So in other words, he can't find a buyer for anything more than $160,000. So the property is now worth $160,000, but he still owes $180,000. He's underwater. He has negative equity. And what he tells his wife is, "Dear honey, we have a problem. What are his options?" Well, hopefully, if he was able to do so, he rode it out. He did not sell. He simply kept making the mortgage payments, and eventually the rents went up and were able to pay for the mortgage. And the housing prices have bounced back, and so Dave didn't go through foreclosure, have his credit rating destroyed. But a lot of people just stopped making the payments. And the renter had no idea that this was happening. They were still paying the rent to the mortgage, to the owner, to the mortgage holder, but the owner wasn't paying the mortgages. And finally, these renters got a letter in the mail with a check for $3,000 from the bank saying, "We're now the owner of the bank, and here's $3,000. Please leave within 30 days. And if you leave within 30 days, we'll send you another $2,000. Yeah, can you imagine what you would want to do if you could find that guy or gal who was accepting, nothing illegal, he was accepting the rent and he was not paying the mortgage. Or he could have gone to the bank and said, "Hey, I got a buyer here who will buy the house for $160,000. That's called a short sale. And the bank could say, "No, we're not going to sell it. We're not going to let you sell it because you still owe it. Yeah, you can sell it, but you have to come up with an extra $20,000 to pay us off." Or they could have said, "All right, we got a buyer because we don't want it to be foreclosed on. We don't want it to be empty, certainly." And so he had engineered a short sale, which means now, during normal times, he's going to get a 1099 form. It's an IRS form for $20,000, because the IRS says if somebody forgives a loan to you, that's income. So in other words, talk about kicking somebody in the teeth. They just lost their entire $20,000 down payment. They now sold their house for $40,000 less than it was worth, and now they get a form in the mail saying they owe taxes on $20,000 that they didn't see. Holy mackerel. And that's why the Congress waived, W-A-I-V-E-D, this rule up until 2013, I think it was, through 2013, or up until 2000, I think it was. Up until 2013, they said, "Okay, we're not going to kick you when you're down." Or the last thing is what some people did is they just walked away. They just walked away from the house. They dropped the keys off to the bank and said, "Okay, it's all yours." Holy mackerel! You see, it's a two-edged sword. Real leverage magnifies your gains when things goes well, and magnifies your losses when things don't go so well. How are we doing for time? Let's get going, Piano. Real estate and IRAs. Well, yes, you can do it. Many people believe it is prohibited, but there are strict, complicated rules. Don't try to go it alone. There are huge penalties if you break the rules, between 15% to 110%. Few knowledgeable regulated trustees and advisors, which usually have high operating fees and expenses because they know they're reputable, they're experienced, and there ain't too many of them, so they charge a lot of money. And you can't do it to your home or your business or your parents or your children's, but it can be your brothers or your sisters. Figure that one out. You must have sufficient cash in the IRA account to perform the necessary transactions. Don't you dare write a check from your regular account or the IRS will come down on you like a ton of bricks. If not, you must either sell the property or deposit more cash into your IRA. But if you go over the annual maximum contribution level, which you saw back in Chapter 3 was $6,500, $7,500 if you're 50 or over, you'll be penalized 6% per year on the amount over-deposited until there is sufficient cash in the IRA, and then you're able to withdraw the amount that you over-deposited. What? What are you talking? You see how complicated it is, folks? You've got to put more money in than you're allowed to do so that you can make the repairs or pay the taxes or pay the insurance. But then you're going to get penalized 6% on any amount that's over the max until you have enough money to pull it out. For this reason, people often pool their IRAs, which is normally forbidden, and so I don't know how they get away with it. Again, seek a reputable, experienced trustee who knows what they're doing and expect to pay a pretty penny for their services. The advantages can be dubious. Investment real estate often has many of the same advantages as an IRA without any of the constraints of an IRA. Capital gains taxes are deferred until you sell the property, which may not be until retirement, or you might bequeath it to your children, in which case the capital gains all go away. Interest income is usually negative or minimal for years, and real estate offers many of the same tax advantages that you would not get if it were inside an IRA. You can't deduct your property taxes. Capital gains on real estate can currently be eliminated if you simply live in the property for 2 years before you sell it, your principal residence. That's $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. That's pretty darn cool. You buy a house, married couple for $200,000, sell it for $700,000, no capital gains. If it's your principal residence. Or the advantages can be compelling. If the real estate investment is in a Roth IRA, as we'll learn about Roth IRAs in our last chapter, then any capital gains and rental income will be tax-free in retirement. That's really cool. And I know one person who has a house, a piece of property in the Roth IRA. Well, good for him. Plus, you can't check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet. Actually, you can, and some people do with Zillow and Trulia, but don't do it. Don't do it. Real estate is a long-term investment. Okay, now, wait a minute. Did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Oh, yeah. Currently, as the law stands now, as long as the real estate is your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. Very cool. Some people are doing this. The savvy people who can fix a toilet and do drywall and all the other things that I can't do. Buy a fixer-upper. Not so much in San Diego. It's very difficult. You're up against the sharks. But somewhere else in the country. Buy a fixer-upper. Live in it for 2 years. Fix it up. Sell it. They usually have another job, right? These are very handy people. And then sell it with no capital gains in 2 years. Or rent out the property for 20 years and then live in it for 2 years and then no capital. There's other tax consequences about that. Have to learn about depreciation and that stuff. But anyway, if you lose money on your primary residence, sorry, it's not tax deductible. Now, here's the kicker. It must be your primary residence. Be careful. If you own two or more properties and frequent each regularly, the IRS can rule that none of your properties is your principal residence, which sounds pretty bizarre, but they did it. They did it. They were able to get away with it. This one couple, now don't feel too bad about this. This is a very wealthy couple. They had a place in Wisconsin, a place in Florida, and a place in Arizona, as I remember. I have to go back and find the article. But they basically moved around all the time. They were just never really in one place or another. And when they went to sell one of their properties, they claimed it as their primary residence, and the IRS said, sorry, you don't have any primary residence. And they took the couple took them to court and lost. So on the IRS website is a whole list of things, questions that you should ask. Do you have your driver's license there? Do you vote there? Do you work there? You know, it's all kinds of questions that you should really. And of course, if you are going to try to do this, talk to a legal professional, real estate professional, a tax professional. Cool. So is real estate a very good investment? Yes. It is a real. Is it a real PETA? Yes. But it can be very, very profitable, folks. And so, again, if you are so inclined, I strongly recommend that you find a position in the industry and learn from the inside out. Cool. So now when we come back, we'll take a look at the alternatives that I hope you stay far away from, unless they turn out to be a, you know, fun time for your hobby, maybe, or you really like to lose a lot of money, or both. See you in our next presentation on real estate and other investment alternatives. Think of how much you have learned, dear students. We are so proud of you. You are official financial gurus.